Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
All right. Welcome in, everyone. We're ready to dive deep today into, well, something a bit unsettling, to be honest. We're talking about the people behind cyber threats, trying to get inside their heads and understand their methods.
Yeah, getting into the digital shadows a bit. And this deep dive, gotta give credit where it's due, is presented by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau. They're a division of the Orange Cyber Defense Epidemiology Laboratory. And their whole approach, how they go about understanding these threats, that's what's really interesting.
So it's more than just, you know, looking at the code and figuring out how the hack happened. Like, what else is there?
Right, exactly. They combine the usual OSINT stuff, open source intelligence, you know, all the public info out there. But they mix that with HUMINT, so human intelligence. That means they're not just tracking digital trails, but actually investigating the people behind it all.
Okay, so getting into the psychology, the motivations. Fascinating.
Yeah, the emotions, the thought processes, even the geopolitics, all the factors that influence cyber threats. It's a much bigger picture.
Today, we're specifically looking at their report on the Evilnet 2.0 group. And just to be clear up front, the Bureau's analysis, it's all from a cyber perspective. Yeah. They use verified open sources, and they're totally neutral in their findings.
Absolutely. Sticking to the facts.
So Evilnet 2.0, that name itself sounds like there's a history there, not just some random new group.
Oh, yeah, definitely history. The report goes way back, all the way to 2017. Back then, they were called ShadowNet, and they were much more low-key, mostly hitting local servers, nothing too flashy.
So how did they evolve from there?
Well, things changed around 2019. They rebranded as Dark Pulse. That's when they got a lot more, I guess you could say, disruptive, more visible attacks, you know, like those DDoS attacks that can take down websites. And they started leaking stolen data, that kind of thing.
So getting bolder, making a statement.
Exactly. And then from 2021 to 2023, they were just known as Evilnet. They expanded their operations during this time and started putting out like ideological statements.
So adding a message to the chaos.
Right. And then, a bit of a surprise, they changed their name again. From 2023 to 2024, they called themselves NetReapers. But during that time, their main focus was on data theft, just leaking stuff left and right.
Okay, so lots of evolution, different names, different tactics. And now they're back to Evilnet 2.0. What's the significance of that, according to the report?
It's not just a rebrand, like a company trying to freshen up their image. It's more like a signal, you know? They're restructuring, getting ready for a new wave of attacks, and these attacks could be way more sophisticated than anything they've done before.
And using that Evilnet name again, plus that 2.0, it feels deliberate.
Absolutely. They're playing on their past reputation, but also saying, hey, we're back and we're even more dangerous now. It's a way to intimidate, to get attention. The rebranding itself tells you something about how they think strategically. They're not just hackers. They're playing a game trying to manipulate perceptions.
So it's not just random chaos. There's a real method to their madness. And they've already proven they're capable of serious damage.
Yeah, no doubt. The report mentions some pretty sophisticated attacks on critical infrastructure, stuff that could really disrupt things. There were some incidents in France in December of 2024 that really raised eyebrows.
Wow, so this is not a group to be underestimated.
The Cyber Intelligence Bureau, they classify Evilnet 2.0 as a highly active and dangerous threat. The kind of group that needs constant monitoring because who knows what they'll do next.
Makes sense. So let's dig a little deeper here. Who are these people? What motivates them?
Well, the Bureau's analysis suggests they're probably transnational, meaning they're not based in one specific country. It's a global network. As for motivations, that's where things get complex, because it seems to be evolving.
Evolving how?
Initially, a lot of their actions seem to be about protesting things like government censorship, mass surveillance, that sort of thing. But their goals have broadened. Now they're trying to trigger, like, systemic crises in democracies. And they're going after anyone they see as a geopolitical enemy.
Okay, so a mix of ideology and maybe some more opportunistic goals.
Exactly. It's a blend of genuine grievances, a desire to cause chaos, and maybe even some personal gain mixed in.
The report also mentions something called hybrid cyber attacks. What are those?
This is where things get really scary. Evilnet 2.0, they've shown they can do more than just online attacks. They can combine those with real-world sabotage. Imagine a cyber attack on a power grid, and at the same time, someone on the inside is physically disrupting equipment.
Oh, wow. So they're bridging the gap between the digital and physical worlds. That's unsettling. And who are they typically targeting with these attacks?
It's a wide range, honestly. Governments, obviously, but also critical infrastructure like power grids, water systems, you name it. They also go after telecom companies, healthcare, e-commerce, even the entertainment industry.
So pretty much anyone is fair game. And how are they organized? The report mentions a decentralized but coordinated network. How does that work?
There are like a bunch of independent cells, but they all follow a general plan. You know, it's all very compartmentalized. Members get instructions through secure platforms, and they have specific roles to play.
So kind of like a terrorist network, but online.
In a way, yeah. And they're really careful about communication. They use encrypted networks like Tor and I2P, stuff that's designed to keep them anonymous, plus secure messaging apps like Signal, and they hang out in hidden forums on the dark web.
So they're tech savvy and security conscious. What about the actual tools they use to carry out these attacks?
They use a lot of standard hacking tools, things like Metasploit, which basically gives them a whole suite of exploits they can use against different systems. They've got reconnaissance tools for gathering information, phishing tools for tricking people into giving up data. And the report says they even develop their own ransomware. That takes some serious skill.
Wow. So they're not just script kiddies downloading stuff off the internet. They're writing their own malicious code. And how do they fund all of this?
It's mainly through their criminal activities. Ransomware is a big one, obviously. They encrypt data and demand payment to unlock it. They also steal data and sell it, commit financial fraud, even do digital extortion. So it's not just about ideology for them. They're definitely in it for the money, too.
So a blend of motivations. Hacktivism, profit, disruption. Now, the report dives into what they call their vectors of influence. Can you unpack that for us?
This is about how they amplify their impact, make themselves bigger than they actually are. One way they do this is through their ransomware as a service model. Think of it like they create the ransomware and then they rent it out to other criminals.
So they're basically the armed dealers of the cybercrime world.
Pretty much. It's a brilliant business model, actually. They make money and they spread their reach without having to do all the attacks themselves. It's leverage, pure and simple.
And the report also mentions strategic alliances. Who are they teaming up with?
This is where it gets even more interesting. They've got connections to all sorts of groups. Other hacktivist groups like Holy League, some factions of Anonymous, GhostSec. They also work with straight-up criminal organizations like Conti. Those are the guys behind the Conti leaks. Lockbit, Reval, DarkSide, all the big names.
Like the cybercrime all-star team.
And it doesn't stop there. They've got ties to underground networks like the Shadow Brokers, Lapsus, and there's even suspicion they might be connected to state-sponsored actors like the Lazarus Group.
So potentially getting support or even direction from governments.
It's hard to say for sure, but the possibility is definitely there. And think about what they gain from all these alliances. Access to more advanced tools, stolen databases, all sorts of resources they wouldn't have on their own.
It's a force multiplier.
Mm.
So they're strategic about who they work with. Are they also strategic about who they attack?
Absolutely. They focus on high-impact targets, things that will cause the most disruption and get them the most attention. Healthcare, finance, energy, those are their favorites.
Going after the things that make society function. And the report says they also leverage geopolitical events. How so?
They're very good at timing their attacks to coincide with international tensions. Let's say there's a conflict brewing between two countries. They'll launch attacks that support one side or the other, framing themselves as digital warriors fighting for a cause.
So they're playing both sides, using global events to their advantage.
Exactly. It's all part of their manipulation strategy. And this is where the report gets really interesting, because it talks about how they use emotional and cognitive intelligence.
That's something we don't often hear about in relation to cybercrime. How do they do that?
Well, one key tactic is what they call cognitive manipulation or framing. Basically, they twist the narrative around their attacks. They present themselves as the good guys fighting against corruption or injustice, when in reality, they're just criminals trying to make a quick buck.
So it's all about spin.
Yeah.
Controlling the message.
Absolutely. And they're very good at it. They also portray themselves as these all-knowing, super powerful hackers, which helps them recruit new members and build alliances. People are drawn to that image of expertise and power.
That's like a cult of personality almost.
In a way, yeah. And they use disinformation, spreading lies and rumors to confuse their victims and discredit their enemies. It's a whole psychological warfare campaign running alongside their cyber attacks.
Wow. So they're hacking minds as well as computers. And the report mentions some specific recruitment tactics, like something called love bombing. What's that?
It's pretty insidious, actually. They basically shower potential recruits with attention and praise, making them feel special and important. They create this intense emotional bond very quickly, which makes people more likely to join the group and do what they're told.
So they're exploiting people's need for connection and belonging. Classic cult tactic.
Right. And then they use rewards to keep people motivated, giving them special titles within the group, offering financial incentives, that sort of thing. It reinforces their loyalty and keeps them coming back for more.
Dangling the carrot. And then there's this idea of mind control through isolation.
Yeah, that's a big one. They encourage their members to cut themselves off from the outside world, from any sources of information that might challenge their beliefs. No mainstream media, no talking to friends or family who might be skeptical. It's all about creating an echo chamber where they can control the narrative completely.
So they're creating their own reality bubble. That's scary stuff.
Mm.
Let's shift gears a bit. What kind of online services and tools do they use to operate?
Oh man, they use everything. Ransomware as a service, as we discussed. They're also into DeFi, decentralized finance, stuff like Quant4j. They use cryptocurrency mixers like Tornado Cash to launder their money. Bitcoin, Monero, those are the cryptocurrencies of choice. And they love decentralized platforms, DAOs, anything that gives them anonymity and control.
So they're taking full advantage of the decentralized web?
Absolutely. They hang out on dark web marketplaces like Hydra and Genesis Market. Use Telegram, Signal, private Discord servers for communication. They set up temporary websites on .onion domains for specific operations. They've even got encrypted newsletters for internal communication. And of course, they use VPNs, proxies, Tor, I2P, the whole nine yards to hide their tracks.
So they're basically ghosts online. And just to recap, who are they targeting? Which industries, which countries?
Industry-wise, it's pretty broad. Entertainment, e-commerce, energy, hospitality, telecom, pharmaceuticals, government, finance, oil, healthcare. You name it, they've probably targeted it. Geographically, their main focus seems to be the U.S., Russia, China, the EU, especially Germany and France. They're also active in Latin America, places like Brazil and Mexico.
So a truly global threat. Okay, let's wrap up with the report's key hypotheses. What do they think Evilnet 2.0 is going to do next?
The most likely scenario, according to the Bureau, is that they'll keep hitting critical infrastructure in NATO countries and countries they see as geopolitical enemies. Healthcare, energy, government systems, especially in Europe and the US, those are going to be prime targets. They'll probably use those hybrid attack methods we talked about. DDoS attacks, ransomware, data leaks, all combined with psychological warfare tactics designed to humiliate and scare people.
Sounds like a recipe for chaos.
Exactly. The goal is to undermine trust, create instability, and make people question everything. And they'll probably frame their attacks in a way that fits current geopolitical narratives, you know, make it seem like they're fighting for a cause.
So hiding their true motives behind the smokescreen of ideology. What about the worst case scenario?
This is where things get really dark. The Bureau's most dangerous hypothesis is that they'll go after vital infrastructure, power plants, healthcare systems, transportation networks, the things that keep society running. And they might even target democratic institutions like elections and the media, trying to erode trust in those systems.
So basically trying to bring society to its knees.
Yeah. And in this scenario, they might even team up with rogue states, which would give them a whole new level of resources and support. The attacks would be highly sophisticated, potentially using zero-day exploits and inside help. They might even use unknown exploits, things nobody's ever seen before. And the impact could be devastating. Prolonged blackouts, disrupted healthcare, economic collapse, maybe even casualties. And because of their connections to other groups and potentially governments, it would be very hard to say for sure who's responsible.
It's a chilling thought, honestly.
Mm.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we've gotten a pretty good look at the Evilnet 2.0 group, thanks to the Cyber Intelligence Bureau's analysis.
And their approach, combining open source intelligence with human intelligence, it really gives you a much deeper understanding of how these groups operate.
We've learned about their history, their motivations, their strategies, their alliances, the disturbing ways they use psychology to manipulate people.
And the potential for disruption they represent, it's huge, both in the digital world and the real world.
So here's a final thought for everyone listening. Given everything we've learned about Evilnet 2.0, their mix of ideological and financial goals, their ability to operate in both the cyber and physical realms, what does this tell us about how we need to think about cybersecurity going forward? How do we even begin to defend ourselves against a threat like this?
That's the million-dollar question, and I don't think anyone has all the answers yet. But the first step is awareness, understanding the complexity of the threat. And then we need to start thinking outside the box, because the old ways of doing things clearly aren't enough anymore.
Absolutely. We need a whole new approach to security, one that takes into account the human element as much as the technical one. That's something for all of us to think about, because this threat is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, it's only going to get more complex and more dangerous from here, so we need to be prepared.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and stay safe out there in the digital world.
Stay vigilant.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.